This is Description, episode 43, for August 31st, 2007, with material recorded May 26th.
Holy crap, this is spectacular.
Welcome to Description. Valerie in Toronto.
Hey.
I'm Valerie, and I am in Toronto. I'm out on the balcony right now of the apartment. As I just said, August 31st, I wanted to get this show in. I've been slagging. Well, I've been doing other stuff. That's Freudian. So I wanted to get this done. And I was sitting out here on the balcony surfing because I can, because I got a router, a wireless router, which I got mainly so I could sit out here in the balcony and do the internets type thing. And so I'm out here on this beautiful end of the morning, just goofing around. And about 15 minutes ago, I hear this roar, and I look off to my left and above into this light blue sky with the odd bit of puffy cloud in it. And there's this line of fighter jets. I think five of them. And they're, you know, flying up and around and making all kinds of noise. And I'm like, oh, yeah. Air show. Because, it's going to be Labor Day weekend. This is the Friday before. As early as Labor Day weekend as there can be, in that tomorrow is the 1st of September. Yay! It's the 1st of September! But yeah, and then the planes, like, they split up, and then they flew kind of toward each other and missed and trailed smoke and all that fun stuff. And I went, oh, well, these guys must be practicing. There must be, like, air show practice going on today. So I'll start recording. I'm not entirely ready to record, but I'll start recording the host bit of the show, and there'll be air show noise going on. Very evocative. So, but you know how this works, right? By the time that I get the mic and I take it out of the enclosure, the mic enclosure that I did to record the first bit, and hooked it up to the stand, and then made sure I could move the preamp closer to the balcony, and then move the thing out on the balcony and set down, and no planes. Why you always got to be on the job. Bam, bam, bam. So there are no planes. Sorry. but there's, you know, plenty of noise. You know, construction, a couple of things down, and a little bit of wind and people talking, and still doesn't quite do it, does it? Oh, well. But I thought, you know, I want to get the damn thing done before the end of the day and therefore the end of the month, so there we go. I've already been talking too long. Okay, so I'm going to go, let's get out of the balcony here. In order to, so I don't need neighbors listening to me talking about what I'm going to be talking about today. Although it's not exactly terribly private, I just don't feel like having people hear me talk to myself. Close this up. Get out of my chair. Toting the eye river here. I decided to bring out this Doors Open recording from May because of another death. What is it with these people dying all over the place? I just had to turn away to pick up the eye river that I'm recording this into.
There we go.
A few weeks ago, at least a couple weeks ago,
A fellow named Richard Bradshaw passed away. And he is largely responsible for a new building in Toronto that I think is pretty fucking awesome. And I think is... Could you hear me shrug right there? Is shrug. Kind of important to the city. And that is the Four Seasons Center for the Performing Arts, but which I prefer to call the Opera House. There's been a club here called the Opera House that is not the Opera House, but I feel like calling it the Opera House because that's what it is. Richard Bradshaw was pretty much the head cheese and conductor of, you know how hard it is to be a head cheese and a conductor? For the Canadian Opera Company. He was a conductor of the, he eventually became conductor of the San Francisco Opera Company, I think. Up until the 80s, and then a friend of his, who was the conductor here for the Canadian Opera Company, said, hey, come on up here and do some stuff. Well, he did it in, like, a British accent. And he did, and dug it. And when the time came for his friend to ditch that gig, he got it. And did an awesome job. Okay, here's an article I was looking for in the Toronto Star from the classical music critic, John Turod. And he did the obituary for the Star, but he also wrote a little bit about putting this thing together. How long is this? Can I do this? I may skip around. In many ways, Toronto got quite the gift from Richard Bradshaw. He moved to the city in 1989 to become the principal conductor of the Canadian Opera Company Orchestra. It was and is one of the country's plum music jobs. Yet no one expected that his larger vision and tenaciousness would one day alter his adopted hometown, both physically and culturally. This is a recurring theme in this series of podcasts. Bradshaw's sudden death at age 63 is a cruel blow that we will feel for months and years to come. If one were to look for an ideal symbol to represent what Richard Bradshaw was all about, it would not be the Four Seasons Center for the Performing Arts itself. It would be the indoor amphitheater inside the building's lobby. We will be there later. Thank goodness the COC's board named it after him. The amphitheater's clear glass perimeter connects the audience with the wider city and passers-by with the activity inside. There is no assigned seating for daytime performances that run from September to June. Admission is free. Bradshaw wanted music and movement to be accessible to all, and he got his wish. When he needed money to pay for this, he went out and found a patron. Do you understand how hard that is? That's really fucking hard. He was committed to making everything presented under the COC banner the best. Under his guidance, the once ragtag house orchestra became a responsive, balanced ensemble that compares well with any orchestra in the world. Bradshaw's new opera house, see, he calls it that, would have fabulous acoustics and excellent sight lines, and so it turned out to be. I think I can vouch for that. Most companies rely on a regular diet of popular operas to bring in the crowds, but Bradshaw was convinced if they were presented well and performed convincingly, a general audience would come to appreciate even the most challenging works in the repertoire. Even that bold undertaking proved true. A couple years before he was officially named the company's artistic director, Bradshaw conducted while Robert Lepage directed a 20th century double bill of Béla Bartók's Bluebeard's Castle, sorry, and Arnold Schoenberg's Uartung in 1993. I'm really crap at pronouncing these things, I'm sorry. Torontonians loved it, as did audiences in New York, Australia, and Scotland, where the touring COC won the Edinburgh Festival's top prize. This isn't the Fringe, that's the festival. In 1996, Bradshaw presented Adam Egoyan's production of Richard Strauss's Salome, also to a strong response. That's an interesting way to put it. I remember when that happened. Adam Egoyan, for those who don't know, and you should know, is one of our preeminent film directors. And I use the term preeminent accurately. He makes artistic films. He's best known for The Sweet Hereafter because it got nominated for Academy Award. But he's quite the cool man about town. And somehow they got him to put together an opera. So I remember that. Robert Lepage, I should also note. Well, I don't want to say he's of equivalent stature in Quebec. I guess he is. But I think that's all you really could compare them with. Robert Lepage is also an extremely artistic and creative and not always populist director and creator of all sorts of things, including film and theater. So these were pretty bold steps at the time. Then, of course, came plans for the new opera house and Richard Wagner. I say this because I don't like Wagner. Richard Wagner's Ring of the Nibelungs, which drew appreciative comments around the world last year. You know how, you know, it's like, is it hard enough to get a freaking opera house up and then you've got to start by putting on The Ring? Nice. The Ring series. Yeah, good. After becoming artistic director in 1994, the British-born Bradshaw applied for landed immigrant status in Canada. I am here and I want to create something that is bigger than just what I do when I am a conductor, he said in a Star interview. There was terrific encouragement to take the job, and I think there are extraordinary possibilities for this country. He saw many of those possibilities through sheer determination. But behind the steely resolve was a great raconteur, who was never at a loss for an anecdote. Besides talent and skill, which he modestly downplayed most of the time, Bradshaw had a personal charisma that no doubt helped open checkbooks and overcome skeptics. That is something that Canadians are not known for. People come from the outside to convince Canadians that things are possible, that skepticism can be overcome. Canadians are known for their skepticism, and I'm one of them. And it takes people like this guy to overrun that. Back to the article. When Bradshaw stopped to speak to someone, his focus was on that person. He listened, he cared. In conversation, Bradshaw admitted that one of his favorite musical experiences every year was conducting the young members of the Royal Conservatory Orchestra. These are the guys who usually ply their trade just down the street here, and that building's being redone. Instead of tackling easy stuff, he would lead them through something like a Mahler symphony. Oh, Mahler, another one I can't stand. It might sound crazy and overambitious, but he did it, and best of all, the students rose to the challenge. The same thing happened to us as a city. Bradshaw had a crazy idea that there would be money to fund a new home for opera and ballet. Despite the glow coming from the corner of University Avenue and Queen Street West these days, the project was never a sure thing. The music director of the Toronto Symphony Orchestra, whose last name I can never pronounce right, Peter Ungian, I want to say, said this. Bradshaw was never afraid of big ideas. Richard opened the door. He was a catalyst for everybody else. Speaking of Toronto's larger cultural renaissance, we couldn't have imagined that an opera conductor would become a city builder, too. That's the article. That was in the Star, August 17th. Now, I'm no big fan of opera. I'm no big fan of ballet. I appreciate its existence, and I appreciate its existence in a city. I have had my experience with classical music, and I have more than a bit of it in my iPod. Although now you know that I really don't like Wagner, and I really don't like Mahler. I'm more of an impressionist. impressionist kind of a gal. Brahms and Bach and Mozart, kind of. Mostly Brahms. I'm a Brahms person. Anyway. So I appreciate this. Also, a year prior at Doors Open, I can't remember where this was exactly, but in one of the places, I think it was the Royal Conservatory down here, Royal Conservatory of Music, which is now in full construction mode being redone, but at the time was still basically a ratty little school, literally a school. There were plans and models, architectural models, both for the new Royal Conservatory and this was somewhere, and for this opera house, the Four Seasons Center of the Performing Arts. And it was like, whoa. And so over the ensuing year, I would walk by or drive by this area of Queen Anne University. And first there was this big hole. And you wonder what will ever come out of this hole. And then, you know, about a year or more later, there rose this construction that was just, man, amazing. So I took the iRiver to this year's Doors Open, walked up from the CBC. If you remember the thing I recorded in the CBC Museum. Okay. So right after I recorded that, the museum was a couple shows ago, right? I walked up University on my way to the Four Seasons Center of the Performing Arts. But first, I had to go through some very different music outside the building.
Hi. It's Sunday of Doors Open. And I'm on my way to the, what the hell do they call it? I'm calling it the Opera House. Ford Center for the, no, not Ford. Whatever the hell it is. Anyway. And, however, I have crossed paths with something called the World Friendship Walk. I still have no idea what it is. But it's all, thousands of people. Most of them appear to be of East Indian descent. Indian, Sri Lankan, Pakistani, etc. Well, I might be wrong about that. And I didn't know what I was going to, if I was going to do anything about this, but then a steel band showed up on this very large truck doing, I still haven't found what I'm looking for. And I thought, well, yeah, I think now it's time to record. Aga Khan Foundation of Canada, or the Canadian chapter of the Aga Khan Foundation. I'll have a link. But there are various groups of people with corporate sponsors, and yeah, it's just another day in Toronto, ain't it? We're on the University Avenue at Richmond, and it's kind of a partial parade because the cops are at various intersections to stop traffic as the parade goes by, and then they kind of see when it's thinning out a little. Well, technically it's not a parade. I see when it's kind of thinning out, and then they go, okay, cars, you can go across. I am now kitty corner from the my destination. I'm calling it the Opera House. Four Seasons, something for the arts, something. I'm gonna take a picture with my new digital camera. Actually, from this angle, it looks kind of, I don't know, foreboding, to be honest with you. Not the kind of thing you want to walk up to and say, "Hi, how you doing?" One side being glass, and the other side being, oh, I gotta cross here. But the other side being this black-gray color that I actually really like otherwise. I finished crossing this half of university.
Why can't it go straight?
And now we'll cross Richmond. This seems to be where people are leaving some tour of some kind for the Four Seasons something something something. Let's just call it. I'm just going to call it the Opera House for it. Okay. Here's Four Seasons Center for the Performing Arts. Okay. That's a sign that's next to a bigger sign for Jaguar and Land Rover. Jaguar and Land Rover, proud sponsors of the Canadian Opera Company at the Four Seasons Center for the Performing Arts. And that sign is next to a snazzy-ass Jaguar. Or Jaguar. I'm American. And it's on top of a platform-ish thing that is, that the cornerstone is part of, and the cornerstone that I'm standing right by right now says Diamond and Schmidt Architects 2006, and said cornerstone is very dark, 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 dark gray. Indeed, this thing just got done, which is why it's probably going to be a very popular destination for Doors Open. Because last year, there were only plans being shown in a big, ginormous hole in the ground at the corner of Queen and University. Walking up University to Queen now. Excuse me. Well, this doesn't look like there's a line, so in we get.
Hi.
Okay. Oh, thank you. Sorry.
Just about to start.
Oh, okay.
No, we do a good job.
Okay, so a concert is about to start. I've been given this pamphlet thingy. Hey, this is very atrium-ish. Having just come from CBC Broadcast Center. Sideways atrium-ish. Oh, I have to take pictures of this. Jeez, oh man. I'm also eventually going to have to shut up because I hear opera people. Okay, so really quickly then. It's atrium-ish, but certainly not square, this lobby. There's this wall next to me that is wood slats. Then down on the floor here, marble floor, is an area for, I don't know, serving drinks and stuff. There's like sinks and things. Meanwhile, the other three surfaces around me, walls-ish, I don't know, side surfaces, let's call them, open. Mainly three, and a little teensy bit of a fourth level of glass walkways. The glass goes halfway up, so you can look over into this area. And there's wooden stairs. Almost look like balsa wood stairs. Going up to the next level, and then frosted glass stairs going up the other three. Hang on. Don't worry, I'll be getting to the opera part. Hang on. I shall take my coffee up those wooden stairs. Under the wooden stairs, by the way, is a little gift area. And of course there's glass on the outside looking out over University Avenue. Let's go up these wooden stairs, which evoke a concert hall, actually. These blonde stairs. I think this is where the opera is going on. I don't know where it's coming from. I think it's the next level up. All right. You can hear it. I'm in the right direction. I'm going up the frosted glass stairs. Check to make sure I'm recording. Level. A better term, because it's too common, bleachers that go up a large level. Now a young brunette girl has joined her. I'm basically walking over them right now. see a sign. It says Richard Bradshaw Amphitheater. So it is technically an amphitheater. Wish I'd been able to take a picture while I was... and it was singing, but... Sorry, I interrupted the piece by crabbing about people making me move, because evidently I'm in people's way of... I'm in the way of people who want to get onto the bleachers even though they're full. Holy crap, this is spectacular. And that's why I just took a picture. Flickr page! One thing, I wish it was more air-conditioned, because I'm warm now. And we're on the second level now. And, wow. A lot of blonde wood. Lots and lots and lots of blonde wood. I have been told to go up to the fifth level. It's a door C to R. Fraser Elliott Hall. Okay, let's go and see what's up here. Should. There's one little section here you're allowed to sit in, and everything else is kind of roped off, caution taped off. Looks like we can go in the side sections and down at the bottom. Whoa, which we will. Cheers.
Away.
Ah, nuts. Oops, excuse me.
Sorry.
Meanwhile, some guy below me is taking pictures anyway. Well, there have to be signs, genius. You're going to tell people that. Well, looks like I just have to describe there, don't I? Again, more blonde wood than 1,000 bowling alleys. Which is good. And, okay. This performance space is really, really, really tall. It goes up all 5 levels. And, holy crap, it makes me dizzy, actually. There are the balconies that, man, okay. There are the balconies, which I'm in the 4th one, that go around most of it. It's kind of a horseshoe kind of situation, with the stage at the opening of said horseshoe. You can look down into the orchestra pit below said stage. Stop saying said. And see if I can give some idea. Oof. And then the orchestra seats on the floor. It's like, I don't know, Massey Hall version 6.0. And so, cushy seats, blonde wood, this gorgeous pearl dark gray cushioning. And it looks like in each section, there are a couple areas, a fair amount of areas actually, think of it, of maybe 6 seats or 12 seats in a line, and those chairs are movable, which means they are removable, which means I think that this is a proper section for wheelchairs. And now the camera police are coming back over to this side. I'm going up. A very crowded 5th level. People are gathered around a sign about sound isolation.
First space Canada built expressly for opera. It is also the home for the season of the National Ballet, but it was a project of the, and accommodates ballet, but it was a project of the opera company and built particularly with a view to supporting live performance by live singers and live orchestra. Now, in a musical performance space, you want to have a public hands on. You want to have good acoustics inside the house to make it an exciting, vibrant experience for what's happening inside. But thinking about our location here, we've got a second very important agenda, and that is how do we keep all those nasty, necessary noises of this neighborhood away from the sounds that are happening inside. We've got ambulances on University Avenue, streetcars on Queen Street. We've got a subway running underneath us. We've got air ambulances landing at SickKids all times of the day and night. So there are two primary strategies to keep the bad stuff out, to keep the bad noise out. First is that you over there are standing in a separate room from you people here. A separate building from the people standing over here. And it's defined by that line on the floor. It's not a gap in the carpet. It's not a flaw in the carpet. It's over a 2-inch acoustic joint which separates an inner building from an outer building. It runs along this wall behind the backstage area, encompassing the orchestra pit at the backstage areas, and it will come out and you'll see it appearing again on the other side as you walk over that way. So you have an interior building surrounded completely by an exterior building. The idea being that the outer building absorbs sound and vibration and doesn't transmit to the inner building. Even where you have services like electricity and water,
which could be the other side then.
From the outer building, it's done with a flexible concept so that the vibration stays on the one side and doesn't transmit. So that's one primary strategy. Second strategy has to do with the foundation. The concrete foundation, as you find in any building this size, but that's not the foundation on which this building is resting. It's resting on a second foundation above that first foundation, and in between, you have pads made of rubber and steel, about 500 of them, about 2 foot square, distributed over that first foundation. Second foundation is poured on top. Subway goes past, shakes the ground, shakes the first foundation. Vibration transmitted into the hockey pads, hockey pucks, as we would only in Canada would refer to them as, but the hockey pucks made of rubber, they absorb the vibration so that by the time the vibration would be getting to the second foundation, it's gone, it's dissipated, and the second foundation is stable, despite the subway going past, as it constantly do it. I work, by the way, at Oise 252 Bloor in Bedford. It's also built on the subway. It doesn't have hockey pucks.
No.
It shakes. You can hear the subway, and I work on the 12th floor. So those two things together, plus some other features like the double sound and light locks, the double walls of the auditorium that are sometimes as far as 8 feet away from the interior wall. And you've got a success story that leads to an N1 architectural rating on sound attenuation. There is no higher rating for sound attenuation. It is, in fact, better than being in the desert. There's less noise, ambient noise, inside the auditorium here than you would find standing in the desert.
The stage is topped by a really freaking large curtain, although not very fancy. Modern looking. Oops, sorry.
Sorry.
I'm going to walk across one row. It's the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7th row. Oh, wow. And a lot of these, you know, the sides of chairs that you put your arms on? Them. A lot of them have plaques on them. Joseph Kirsner and family, Ava, Tom, Rose and Ray Wolf and family, Rose and Ray Wolf and family, Catherine and Marie Corlett, Catherine Marie Corlett, this one's blank, Evans family, in memory of Ilona Diener. So, patron stuff.
they too have the protection plastic and other stuff on water. But because it's painted dark, it recedes, so that we don't get the full feeling of a giant room here. This auditorium seats about 2,000 people. 923 on this level, 250 on the grand ring just above. Is that right?
180 on the grand ring.
And 250 on the next two, and 500 on the fifth tier. And if you notice, these rows start with D. There's a reason for that. Because row A, B, and C, that seating is suspended way back on tracks, way back under the stage. Because this space for the orchestra pit accommodates 110 musicians. That it would be used for 20th century Wagner or Shostakovich or Strauss, the Elektra, have huge orchestras. You need this huge pit, and every inch of it is used. But for a Baroque or the later operas that use smaller orchestras, they might not need that much space. So when you get up later, you can have a look, and you see that there's a line across in the floor of the orchestra pit. Now, either
along the center
can rise up on something called spiral lifts. They're kind of like a slinky. That's really oversimplification. But these lifts are quiet, and they're precise, and they're computer operated, so that the floor will definitely come to the right level. So either the front half or the back half can come up to this floor level. Or both. If there isn't an orchestra, for example, I told you about the jazz festival that's coming in July, they will probably not use a pit. Things will come from the stage. So they don't need the pit at all. The whole floor could rise up. Don't put me on that, because I don't know what they're going to do, but the flexibility is there for whoever is producing the show.
The curtain's going up.
We do get to see it.
Partially. It's going up as far as the height of a man.
And this space to the right is a real boon to the ballet. Because back in the Hummingbird, ballet dancers rarely walk off the stage. They leap. And the danger in Hummingbird was to leap into a brick wall. I never heard of it happening, but I'm sure there were many a heart-stopping moment. And here they have lots of space to leap off. And there you can see the ropes that manage the fly.
Yes, the side stage area is very large.
To hold scenery, props, whatever. Above the stage, you see a black panel, which is where they project the surcharge. Because most of the operas are presented in that languages other than English. So the translations appear up there, which means this is not such a wonderful seat, even if it's expensive, because you have to
sort of look at the stage for a moment. They're still taking up part of the set. Now the ballet comes in. They have a separate floor put in because for ballet dancers, they're dancing. They need what is known as a sprung floor, which gives them, when they land, they have some space for friction, and other than if it was just a regular floor, there would be, there wouldn't be a performance the next night because they'd all have knee injuries. So every theater has a sprung floor, but the ballet has a special one. So the sets you think they could leave it down the entire time, but the opera sets are so heavy, it would damage the floor. So between each opera and ballet period, they have to take up whatever the opera has been using off the floor, and then once they're all finished, the ballet techs will come in and lay the floor and the sets for the ballet company as well. And they'll hang their sets. They have one major ballet, Don Quixote, and a series of short ballets. So they will have all those sets in place probably by next Saturday when their first performance will be.
And for individual operas too, the floors might be raked. I don't think anybody ever performs on a flat stage.
Not usually. Elektra was raked.
Yes. And under the stage, lots of things go on under that stage. There's a track space. So the individual mise-en-scène for one particular opera would saw a hole in the floor for someone to pop up or disappear into, or a flame to come, whatever. You never know what's going to happen in an opera. And then at the end of that show, the hole has to be fixed. But the space is under there for people to pop out of and disappear into.
I think that pretty much does it, though. I don't think I'm going to go to the 220. Whatever. So I'm going to go back up and sit down, which is the most thing you want to be doing most often. That door's open. The most precious commodity. Door's open. Place to sit down. I'm gonna go to the amphitheater and sit down and listen to this recital. I find it interesting that these are frosted glass stairs and not an escalator. I don't think they have the technology for a frosted glass escalator yet.
And that'll do it for another episode of Description, Valerie in Toronto. Thank you so much for downloading and, just listening to the damn thing. And for those of you who subscribe, it's very convenient and it saves on bandwidth. Remember the blog, descriptiontoronto.com. I just remembered today is blog day. I've heard from a couple other bloggers, and so I got a blog. I never really was much of a blogger before I had a podcast, so I've never been that enthusiastic or into a lot of blogs. But, you know, without blogs, where would we be? So I guess I'm supposed to come up with 5 blogs that I enjoy and put them in my blog for other people to check out. So I'm going to go thinking about that now. My blog, descriptiontoronto.com. Why? Because you have the shows, you have descriptions of the shows, kind of, and you have big, long lists of links that have to do with crap that I was talking about in the show. And I write stuff that has vaguely something to do with the show. And so there's your blog right there. I will leave you with, I'm going to bring the mic back out to the balcony and see and hear if I can hear. See if I can hear. You can believe all the shit I got to move when I got to move this damn microphone. Because I'm not using the Griffin right now. I'm going to move this over here. I'm going to leave you back out on the balcony. Let's see if anything falls down. Please don't fall ever. I'm perching the pre-ed ever so precariously on something that could fall over at any moment. That could be something. So back it on the balcony, see if we can get any
sounds of any planes practicing the air show. And if not, there you go.
So thank you so much again, and take care. Five minutes later.
See, I told you.